Craig, do we have more?
Yes.
Okay. Members, I'd like to bring the House Environment Natural Resources Policy Finance Committee to order. Good morning. We just have one item on the agenda today. It's House File 2275. Members, I'd like to move House File 2275 to be passed and go on to Rules Committee. Members, just want to say thank you to everybody. This, well, I guess never say never, but it may be our last committee. So there's donuts from Emily's Bakery and Hastings here. I'd like to thank our pages and staff for doing a great job. I was short and didn't thank everybody when we presented our bill, and I was quite embarrassed. So thank you to partisan, nonpartisan staff for all you've done, our pages, for the great work, and everyone. So thank you, all of you. I'm not going to name you, just but you all know who you are. So thanks a lot. Representative Albright, I'd like to move the DE1 to get the bill in the shape we would like. Any discussion to the DE1? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Amendment's adopted. Representative Hansen, do you want to move the A2? Representative Albright, you're aware of the A2?
Mr. Chair, members, I am, and we would consider it a friendly amendment.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is something I think we've done before. We to make sure we complete the projects that were in that earlier disaster bill so that we don't just stop because, oops, we ran out of authorization. So I'd move the A2 amendment.
Discussion of the A2? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A2 is adopted. I think, Representative Albright, we now have the bill in the shape you would like. Representative Albright, maybe you can lay out what the bill is. We'll spend a few minutes to walk through so we understand. It is a significant size bill, so we should spend a few minutes talking about it. Representative Albright, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. Thank you for your attendance on a morning such as this. I too wanted to stop for donuts, understanding that that would be recompense for something like this, but stop by a similar bakery, but they were out because someone had been there before and taken all the good ones. So I don't know if that was you, Mr. Chair, or not, but thank you in advance. Members, there are a number of handouts in your packet, and I'll just draw your attention to the graphic that is shown by the water discharge damage that shows the state of Minnesota on the first page. And literally, members, this is the disaster relief bill that was mentioned much earlier in session by myself as part of kind of a fair warning when we passed the deficiency bill that there was another one coming. And this really is reflective of the rain event that actually, for most of people in the state of Minnesota, started on June 11th and didn't stop until July 11th. And for folks in Scott County, we were the epicenter of that. In the course of several days, we received a total of about 14 inches of rain. Much like if some of you are familiar with the rain event and the disaster that was caused up in Duluth by their rain event, there is a key difference that I just remark with regard to the difference between the disaster that occurred in Duluth and the one that occurred particularly hard hit by those folks in Scott County, Le Sueur, Rice, and Dakota, and Scott County again. But up there you had the rain fall off rock and it went towards Lake Superior. In Scott County in particular, we have geology such that it goes over sandy loam on some hills and terrains that causes for mudslides. It causes flooding. We have a particular reliance upon our lakes for not only business interests but also for recreation. And so, as you'll hear in the testimony from the folks that I brought with me this morning, you'll, I hope, understand the implications for rain. There is another spreadsheet, members, in your packet that I'll draw your attention to as well, and it actually shows the widespread reach that rain event of 2014 really occurred for all of us. You can look down the list, and you can probably identify a number of the counties that either some of the members around this table represent personally or those in the neighborhood of where you're representing, and you've also, I'm sure, by now, over the course of the last 11 months, heard of the damage and the continuing saga of trying to get back to square one after the damage and to remediate both Hillside, Lakeshore, and as well as the roads and bridges that were damaged by such such an event. The bill itself takes into consideration both fixing up the roads and bridges that were damaged, but also for flood mitigation projects, as well as other instances that are appropriate for such a concern. I have with me this morning three testifiers, principally Director Kelly from the Homeland Security, as well as Mr. Keene, Chief Engineer for Bowser, as well as Pat Lynch from the DNR, from speaking to a hydrology perspective. And so, Mr. Chair and members, with your indulgence, I would appreciate if I could bring Director Kelly forward for his laying out of the bill and the process that we have undertaken over the last 11 months to put together the numbers that you see in the bill itself.
Director, if you could come forward, identify yourself for the record, and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Joe Kelly. I am the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management with the Minnesota Department of Public Safety.
Welcome, Director. Go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As Representative Albright reminded us all, last summer we had a month of solid rain, if you will. In the end, the damage caused by that event resulted in a presidential disaster declaration for 37 of Minnesota counties and three of its tribal governments for more than $50 million of uninsured damage to public infrastructure. As members will recall, at the beginning of the session, you appropriated money for the FEMA match, if you will, for that public assistance, that public infrastructure damage. That is authorized under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 12B, or as we now refer to it, the Disaster Contingency Account, as the vehicle that we use to pay that non-federal share out of. This bill completes the disaster assistance, if you will, by giving you the opportunity to appropriate money under Minnesota Statutes Chapter 12A, which is supplemental disaster assistance. And by supplemental, we mean this money is appropriated for expenses, damages, and other projects that are either not FEMA eligible or they are mitigation type projects, mitigation type work, which is why the representatives from Bowser and the DNR are here today, because they fall primarily in their areas. It took some time to go through the process. This is the first time we have fully used the disaster contingency account. This disaster was unusual in that it took a good deal of time working with FEMA to get all of the counties that we thought were eligible for federal assistance included in the disaster declaration. It took months, where it would normally, our experiences, take a week or two. But the Minnesota Recovers Task Force, which our department chairs, met not less than eight times with representatives of the other agencies that that can provide assistance to local communities to help them recover, as well as representatives from those communities, some of which are here this morning. I think it's fair to say, because of the sequencing here with the 12B bill first for the FEMA share, and now the supplemental appropriation, we have had the time to very carefully and thoroughly vet these projects, make sure of their eligibility, and determine what the cost factors involved are. There is no appropriation in this bill for the Department of Public Safety. Our needs were met with the first disaster relief bill at the beginning of the session, because we work with FEMA. But because we facilitate the Minnesota Recovers Task Force, we wanted to provide this context for how this bill fits into the process and to answer your questions. But the other agencies that are represented in the bill for damage, primarily, again, the DNR and Bowser, are here to answer your questions. But I certainly, Mr. Chair and members, can answer questions about the context, how we got to this part.
Thank you. Questions for Director Kelly. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Kelly, is this an agency, or is this like the administration initiative, or is this Representative Albright's, or you know, have the agencies here? I'm just trying to see if this is like a supplemental request from the administration, or if this is the agencies providing assistance to the bill.
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, we often refer to this kind of bill as the unmet needs, if you will, the unmet needs bill. So from our perspective, these are requirements, needs, projects that have come up from the communities to the agencies that provide that assistance.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's not a governor's supplemental request. It's a responding to what the locals are providing in terms of needs.
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Thanks.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mine is a comment about this whole issue of disaster relief, so it's not a criticism of this bill or to the testifier, but the ongoing frustration I think we have about disaster relief, and Representative Pawlowski, if he were here, he could be our resident expert, but in this session, it seems to me in one session we have multiple disaster bills, and it's hard to see how they all fit together. But when we're talking about taxpayer dollars that are going to help people out, we always have to hope that we're doing it in an equitable way where we're ultimately fair to everyone. And I think the work that Representative Pawlowski did was meant to say we should set up a fund, we should fund it, and then somebody measures. I mean, you write in what are the measures, how do we determine what's the level, and when do we hold people particularly harmless. In a number of bills this year, we've seen, well, whatever FEMA doesn't cover, we'll cover. Or in the case of the avian flu, whatever the federal government doesn't do, we do. But do we do that equitably to any kind of disaster, and what's the definition of a disaster? If we think about how we do PFA, Public Facilities Authority, we try really, really hard not to give in to political pressure to list our own projects. We let them make the determination based on all of the measures that they do so well. It even occurs to me that we, and I haven't looked at that work recently, but when I see local roads and bridges, should MnDOT, in its local road and bridge fund, should it have a disaster contingency fund so we don't make decisions? When do we fix local roads and bridges, and when should they be measured against other priorities? So it's just this ongoing issue with disasters and how, when we use taxpayer dollars, how do we do it equitably and in a way that's fair to all? You've probably heard little hints of people who feel some frustration that, well, does the fire that destroyed our business, should we cover that and hold that owner totally harmless? So I think that is an ongoing concern that maybe we still need to do some work on.
Well, and thank you for that comment, Representative Hausman. I had some of the same questions, concerns, and met with, had discussions with Director Jaski from Bowser, and actually Mr. Hagemeyer and I went in and sat down with Mr. Marks to understand, are we following the good work of Representative Pawlowski? And I came away from that is the basis of what we're doing here, using the criteria that Representative Pawlowski put in law to state how we deal with disasters kind of on a criteria basis. And Mr. Keene may be able to elaborate on that more fully, but I came away from it because I wonder sometimes, well, you have a disaster and maybe you got a road or a stream bed or something that was in need of work, and wow, now we had a disaster. Well, let's get it all fixed up way beyond what it was originally. And it's my understanding that this bill is not reaching out like that. It's not, or use the example of maybe a bunch of road signs needed to be replaced because they were wore out. And we're paying for all that kind of work now. It's my understanding we're not doing that this is doing the criteria that Representative Pawlowski laid out. But I don't know, Representative Albright, if you've got something to add. Otherwise, I'll have a couple more questions, and Mr. Keene might be able to also or but Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Hausman, I think we all share the desire of not enriching the circumstances of someone that's been, to their detriment, to experience a disaster such as this, and so I share your concern. I think the work that Representative Pawlowski started, I think, should be continued. The circumstances of the amount that was dedicated towards the fund, if you consider what it went towards the deficiency, it was quickly drained. But in light of that, and in light of the circumstances that prevail upon the state in this disaster and others, I think it's a good work that should be continued and actually enhanced in the interim to consider what type of funding is necessary for these disasters as they would come along, so that we're not put in a predicament or a situation where we've always got to be coming back and discussing this on a piecemeal basis.
Representative Albright, one thing I'd like to add, I noticed in the spreadsheets it talks about parts of this that are bondable, parts are not bondable. I think, generally speaking, the whole bill, about 50% of it would be bondable if we were going to bond. I myself like the idea that we're using all cash. We are in a situation where we have some surplus now, and we're not sure what's going to happen on bonding. I think Representative Hausman and Representative Torkelson are working on a potential one, but we want to make sure this moves forward. So I want to let people know where they see bonding listed on here. Your bill is using all cash. It's not anticipating bonding. And so that's the context of this bill. I got a few more
Mr.
people.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that comment.
Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, Representative Hausman and I had a short commentary after this bill was presented to the Public Safety Committee on Monday, and she shared those sentiments with me. And I think you shared exactly what the point is, that right now it's an all-cash position, but should circumstances change during the course of the session and some type of a bonding bill comes forward, that might prevail upon a part of this bill as well.
Okay. Representative Albright, I wasn't aware of that, so you're saying it's in the end it's potential that part of this could end up becoming, if there was a bonding bill, if we were to have a bonding bill come forward, it's potential some of this would move over to bonding then?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Okay. All right. That's good to have on the record. I was not aware of that. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Director Kelly, you mentioned that this has taken about 11 months, and I'm just wondering if this is now the new typical of how long it will be taking. I know before it was trying to meet the need as quickly as possible, and certainly 12A and 12B helped to address those needs much more quickly. But as this seems to take this long, I'm wondering, how do you see the future with regards to a timeline and being able to address the needs?
Director Kelly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hoppe, I'm not sure exactly what the timeline will look like as far as numbers of days or months and what the gap between one party and the other would be. But I do think it's fair to say that future disaster assistance bills will be sequenced, and I think the sequencing of them probably allows us to do more accurate work. And by that I mean, if you, as Representative Albright referred to the floods from 2012, there was one disaster bill. It had an article that dealt with the FEMA match, and then it had another article that dealt with all these other needs. What we have now with the disaster contingency account is, once we figure out exactly what our share of the FEMA reimbursement is going to be, we can move forward with that and continue to reimburse communities that are recovering, and then maybe take a little more time to work through the supplemental request needs that the communities have. So how much time will it take? I'm not sure how to answer that, but I do think that the sequencing of figure out what's eligible for FEMA and how much that costs first, and then move into a deliberate process to vet the other unmet needs is probably the way it would go. Depending on the time, we may be able to do it at the exact same time in the exact same bill, but perhaps not. And I hope, hope that answers your question, Representative.
Follow-up, Representative Poppe. Okay. Representative Purcell.
My question has been answered. Thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is maybe a question for staff, and it's about sort of the process for these types of bills and how they move. I remember, you know, the Duluth flood had, you know, some transportation appropriations and some other things, and I'm not sure we saw that in transportation. It seems like sometimes these go to a committee of jurisdiction if there is, you know, some money for a particular division, and sometimes they don't. So maybe it just goes right to Ways and Means. So I'm just wondering, you know, what the custom and usage is for how a bill like this travels. Do we have a sense of that, or maybe, Mr. Chair, you do, but I thought maybe the staff could give us some perspective on that in terms of the...
Well, Representative Hornstein, I know because of the significance of the role Bowser is playing in this part of the
That's
bill.
That's why it's here.
It's here because of that. Clearly in our jurisdiction, and a lot of this money is through them. Yeah. I'm not positive on the transportation.
I just was looking at Section 2, so...
I don't know if staff has something to add, or we could maybe research that. I don't know. Ms. Taylor, if you know the history when we've done, some have been done in special session where it's all kind of ironed out ahead of time. We come in on a one-day special session and we pass it, but we do sometimes break and have some committee meetings in the morning. I don't know. That's a good question. Do you know, Ms. Taylor, if they've historically gone to transportation or not?
Mr. Chair, members, I really don't know.
Well, that'd be
just
a good thing for
us
to find
about
out.
That.
We'll find out and get an email out. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, just following up on that, in terms of process, the motion was to go to rules. To go between committees, would it go to rules? If it had to go to transportation, would it go to rules, then to transportation, and then back to rules? Is that where we'd what it would have to happen? Or if it had to go to capital investment, it'd go to rules, and then capital investment and back to rules? Or?
Well, I think that would be the normal process, Representative Hansen. There are two bills out there, and I'm trying to remember, Representative Albright, don't we actually have a different bill before us than public safety had before them, so that we could move them both simultaneously, but both are traveling through rules each time before they go to another committee because of deadline. Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct. There are two identical bills. The one that was heard in public safety is not 2275, and in the effort to get this moving forward as quickly as possible, we cloned it. And so this is an identical match to the one that was heard in public safety on Monday.
And Director Kelly, remind us, this money, is this part of this bill that's before us? Is this dealing with road right-of-way and fixing roads in this bill?
Mr. Chair, if I understand your question, some of the other road repairs were addressed in the previous bill and in the Department of Transportation's appropriation to match the Federal Highway Administration program. The things that are in here are probably mitigation and or the parts of a project that is not eligible for FEMA. It could, because while they're rebuilding that road, what FEMA will do is repair it to pre-disaster condition. But if, as the engineers look at it, they think, well, if we made a change, if we moved it this way a little bit, if we repositioned a culvert, we won't have the kind of damage as last time. That's the type of road projects that are they're in this bill.
Yeah, and that was my understanding. And maybe at this point, why don't we bring down Mr. Keene, and he can kind of talk a little bit about that, because I that was my discussions with Director Jasky of what we're doing. Mr. Keene, if you want to come forward and give us your testimony, then we'll hear from Mr. Lynch also. Welcome, Mr. Keene. If you could identify yourself for the record, then go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Al Keene. I serve as the Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I'd like to start out with just a little background on how we get to the numbers that are in the bill for Bowser. Whenever the governor declares a state of emergency or declaration, we seek input from the Soil and Water Conservation Districts for damage on private lands primarily. So we're focused primarily on damage to private lands, and therefore what you see in this bill are needs for new conservation practices on private lands for erosion, sediment control, water quality protection, That's the focus of the program that we administer through Chapter 12A. And I'll also just say that Chapter 12A is the framework within which all of our agencies work. And after it was passed, after the 2007 flood, it's created much more structure and coordination as well through the Minnesota Recovers Task Force for that work. So what you see in front of you in that table in the first column is needs for new conservation practices on private lands, again, spread across all 37 counties or nearly all of them. And that information was garnered through soil and water conservation districts. And they had an opportunity this year because of the time frame to actually update those numbers more than once. And we take a portion of their total estimates because we know that some of those projects may be eligible for federal programs. And as Chapter 12A lays out, the priority for use of money is private insurance, federal funding, and then state funding. So that's part of the way that we operate, like all other agencies, to ensure that we use that sequence, if you will, of funding. I would also point out that Senate File 1, the previous funding, there was funding for Bowser in that. That was for repair of existing conservation practices. So the funding that the legislature provided in earlier in the session was just for repair of existing conservation practices. The funding that is in this bill is for new conservation practices, needs caused by the flooding, in particular a substantial erosion and landslides, those kinds of things that are in fact water quality threats as well. In the second column in that table is a list of needs for reinvest in Minnesota Reserve conservation easements. A number of these lands that were damaged bad enough that a landowner can't repair it, doesn't want to repair it, would much rather try to put it into a long-term perpetual easement with perennial vegetation. So putting it into a conserving use, and we use the Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve program to do that. So in the last column there, you see needs that were identified by soil and water conservation districts for that purpose. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any other additional questions.
Mr. Keene, I just want to clarify. You said that the property owner may want to do it. I'm assuming that Bowser or other state agencies and or DNR are involved in a process, and you have to agree that it's needed to be done. It's just not that a property owner can want to do it. There must be some criteria that you lay out.
Mr. Chairman, members, absolutely right, because the Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program does have criteria and sideboards, if you will, too. So therefore, these lands need to be eligible for that. And in many cases, for flood response type of conservation easements, they are floodplain lands that it would make sense to take them out of agricultural production, put them into a conserving long-term perennial vegetation.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Keene. And I was listening closely and trying to remember previous disasters going back to Rushford in 07. I believe we had money for rim in there and we had some erosion. But did I hear you correctly in saying that when we were doing things before, we were fixing existing infrastructure versus putting in new preventive infrastructure? Are we setting a new precedent in this bill by putting in new infrastructure, or could you maybe clarify what you were saying?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, we do both in terms of repairing conservation practices that had previously been put on the land and were damaged by the flood, again, beyond what's a fair expectation of normal repair and maintenance. Those practices typically are not designed for huge floods. They're designed for smaller events. And then where there's substantial erosion, for example, and new conservation practices are needed, to address that. That's the kind of new work that we do. So it's we can call it infrastructure and a conservation practice, but it's not like a road or bridge or something like that. It is, in fact, conservation practices to repair the land that was heavily damaged by the flood.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Keene, are any of these practices on, let's say, city property or county property or rights-of-way? I know you provide for private land, but sometimes you provide assistance for public land where there's been erosion. Are any of the ones that have come up from the districts like city property where they need help? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, I can't tell you specifically if any of these are, but you are correct that we have worked with cities, for example, to repair damage on a stream, for example, that is outside of what FEMA will do. So if they're repairing a bridge, a culvert, and erosion within the right-of-way of that, that's typically FEMA eligible as public assistance. If there is additional erosion adjacent to that, that in fact does threaten water quality, et cetera, then we will partner with the city, for example, to do that as well. So I know that we have worked on some parks. We've worked on those kinds of projects as well.
And Mr. Keene, I see there's Blue Mound and Fort Ridge State Park are both listed here. I'm assuming that's work off the right-of-way in those state parks. So that might be along the line of what President Hansen is mentioning. Mr. Keene.
And Mr. Chairman, those projects, in fact, you will hear about from DNR.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm thinking back to 07 and the city of Hoka. There was a creek that we visited that was pushed out with a lot of debris, and I think that was there was a city park there that we visited. Do you remember that one? Is that the type of thing?
Mr. King.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, yes, it can be. And in fact, in Hoka, we partnered with the Natural Resources Conservation Service with their emergency watershed program so that there were landslides, there was bank erosion, and those types of projects do qualify under the program that we administer under Chapter 12A.
Thank you. Next, we'd like to hear from Mr. Lynch, from DNR. Thank you, Mr. Keene. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. My name is Patrick Lynch. I'm a floodplain hydrologist with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. I work closely with Kent Lockesmo, our Director of Capital Investment. Section 4 of the bill before you includes $5.155 million for the Department of Natural Resources, and I'd like to walk you quickly through how those funds would be spent, consistent with Chapter 12A. The first item in Subdivision 2 is $2.14 million, and those monies would be used for two particular projects. Mr. Chair, you've mentioned those, the Blue Mounds Dam at Blue Mound State Park in Rock County near Luverne, Minnesota. That dam was destroyed in the flood last year, and $1.8 million is the engineer's estimate to rebuild that dam in the state park. The balance of that $2.14 million or $340,000 would be utilized to replace a bridge at the Fort Ridgely State Park, which is near Fairfax in Renville County. That bridge also was destroyed in last year's flood. The intention it would be to, and the expectation would be that 75% of the costs of these two projects would be reimbursed by FEMA through the Public Assistance Program. Project worksheets were completed and submitted last year for these projects. So these funds that we're requesting would be to essentially allow us to get those projects constructed. And again, with the full expectation that FEMA would be reimbursing us for 75% of those project costs. Subdivision 3 includes $3.015 million for flood hazard mitigation grants. And I might draw your attention to a spreadsheet that I provided. Working through the Minnesota Recovers Task Force, we've identified a number of projects in seven counties that would be eligible for FEMA hazard mitigation grant assistance, the FEMA's HMGP program. And of those, so we've broken down how those that $3.015 million would be spent. And briefly, it would be $1.4 million would be go towards the Prior Lake Spring Lake Watershed District channel outlet repair. There was, as Representative Albright explained, there was some pretty significant damage to the outlet structure system of the Prior Lake Spring Lake Watershed's outlet system. Similar to DNR projects, the expectation, again, on this Prior Lake Spring Lake Watershed District project was that FEMA would be reimbursing for 75% of the costs of these repairs. And again, a project worksheet was submitted for this particular project to FEMA, and it's under review. The remaining $1.615 million would be for hazard mitigation grants to local units of government. That would be leveraging the FEMA monies that would provide 75% of the mitigation costs for the projects, again, listed on this spreadsheet. I've redacted the names and eliminated street addresses numbers, but again, there's, I believe, 16 or 18 particular projects, some of which are public acquisition through local unit government acquisition of at-risk or flood-damaged structures. You'll see that there's a request for $500,000 in general fund money. This is for some projects that we've identified that are not eligible for bonding, and those would be projects to either relocate or to elevate or lift the structure to a safe elevation. Those would not be bondable, so we've asked for $500,000 so that we can help local units of government with some of those projects. In a nutshell, that's our request, and I'd be happy to entertain questions, Mr. Chair, from you or members.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lynch. I have 2 points I want to make. One, walk us through the process when this $2.655 million comes back from FEMA. Walk us through the process, both if it ends up being bonding, how the money comes back, and where you send it to, and if it's cash, when the feds send that money back, where it goes back to.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not well versed in that financial that process, but my understanding would be that would these projects would be completed, and FEMA would be on a reimbursement basis, so we would be paid back. And my understanding is that this, if it were bond fund financed projects, that those funds would go back to pay the bond. If it's cash, quite frankly, I don't know how that process would work.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Lynch. I just want to confirm and wanted to get on the record that you're not free to go spend that money on something else. It needs to be returned back. If it's general fund money, you need to send it back to the general fund. If it's bonding proceeds, you're not free to go use that. That needs to go back to the bond fund and pay bond funds off. I mean, we have this situation in different cases. I think of a veterans home where, and Representative Hausman will know this, a lot of times we fund veterans home, we bond the full amount, and then 65%, I think, in that case comes back later, and that needs to go back to the bond fund. And there's some other cases where the feds reimburse us for some bonding things, and I just wanted to make sure that DNR knows that money is supposed to go back. Mr. Lynch, you also talked about, I had to remember, and I appreciate the conversation about to make sure that we don't do too much, but Representative Clark, I've got to remember a hearing that both you and I attended down in the small community of Rushford probably a decade ago now, when we toured the school and looked at some of those poor families that were on that little creek down there, and how they weren't actually eligible only for so much, and to to see. Oftentimes, it's good that we have good scrutiny about are we doing enough, but boy, I can tell you to see the look on those folks home and that school and to walk through that school and think, you know, to question, were we doing enough? I would just encourage folks, if they're wondering, to tour some of the devastation at these places and what they go through. And unfortunately, there's a very direct line as far as FEMA, and they don't cross it if it doesn't meet this criteria. A lot of times families are looking at a mortgage with a bank, and they just walk away from it, unfortunately, even though they don't want to leave their home and such. So it's a tough thing to deal with, and I appreciate Representative Albright what you're doing. Representative Clark.
Yeah, I remember just comment to your comment. First of all, I remember there was another community, Faribault, too, that I think had a similar problem with a lot of families who were not. I don't think that's related to this question, but I just wanted, Mr. Chairman, to ask. You mentioned that these names are concealed here, and what is the reason for that, the names are concealed?
Mr. Lynch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I believe it was for purposes of the Data Practices Act, privacy. On my original spreadsheet, I did not have those redacted, but I believe at the last Senate hearing I was at, they had been removed, and I assume they were for privacy purposes.
Representative Albright?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. They were redacted for purposes of privacy of the property owners.
And I'm assuming that's required by law. We're not supposed to.
Chair, that is correct.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Representative Clark?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I've never run across that before. I'm very interested in understanding why that would be. I mean, privacy, data privacy, I mean, what are we talking about here? Usually, this kind of public expenditures are not private, so I don't know. I would like to know more about the background of that, I guess.
Okay, Representative Clark, we'll have staff research that and email that to us to understand. So this is money that's going out to help private homes, and they maybe are not allowed to show which addresses while they're being concerned. It looks like Mr. Lynch might have something to add. Mr. Lynch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, members of the committee, the once we have a grant agreement with the local unit of government to go ahead with these projects, and these projects are commenced, I believe then this information does become public.
Yes. Representative Albright.
And Mr. Chair, and that's correct. As Mr. Lynch said, once the contract is completed or consummated with the property owner, then the information is free to the public.
Then the taxpayers will know how their money is proposed.
Mr. Chair, that is at the point which the property location is identified.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can't help thinking back to yesterday when Representative Bernardi referenced the 50th anniversary of the Fridley tornadoes and the devastation that was involved in that and the massive amount of area that was covered. And I think it actually started down in southwest of the Twin Cities as well. But 50 years ago, the state didn't pick up the cost to clean up. And over the last 10, 15 years, we're picking up more and more. And we know that sometime this summer there's going to be a disaster. We know that there's going to be tornadoes. There's going to be these things that happen. And we put a little bit of money in to avoid having to come in to have the special sessions. In the special sessions, we've spent $100 million several times. So I think that what we're going to have here is the fund, if we're going to cover everything, which is very, very hard to say no now because we've broke the seal on this. We're talking 100 to 200 to 300 million a year, frankly, of cleanup or response is what the path we're on. And I think we're going to do that. I mean, I just think that's probably what we're going to do. But we're almost going to need an account that's bigger, somehow funded to do. If we're going to go to this level of having actual houses in here with the projects, when we hit another Fridley's type of tornado, this will be a stack of sheets of houses. And that's kind of mind-boggling, Mr. Chair, because this is going to be big. If we proceed, which I believe we will, this is going to be a larger and larger part of our budget, whether it's bonding or general fund or some special fund, because if the insurance doesn't cover it, or if the city can't levy for it, or if the private entity can't cover it, and the state becomes the insurer of last resort, we're going to need a bigger budget that covers this in the future. And I think we've had the auditor look at, you know, kind of the practices that we've set and where the dollars are, but it keeps accelerating and it keeps growing. And it's kind of, maybe we take a pause and think about that just for a moment, because it's going to be big.
Well, thank you, Representative Hansen. And I do anticipate next year that we'll have a committee hearing on this point. I have some of the same concerns. As you know, the FEMA grants are 75% of, they reimburse 75% of the damage, and then the state pays 15%, and the local match supposedly is 10%. I think in four of the last five major disasters, the state has picked up the locals 10%. I think it's the last three in a row, maybe now we've done that. Might have to go back to the fourth one we didn't, and the fifth one we did. Representative Hansen, to your point, I think we need to have a discussion next year before we have a disaster. What is the are we going to do here? Are we going to pay that local before it happens in your community, and you're looking, well, is Hastings going to get the 10% stuck on their taxpayers, or is the state going to pick it up? Let's have it with a question mark on the community and have a good discussion. I think we need to have that in the role, as you said, then when you go outside the FEMA eligible, what are we doing? You know, we're trying to do here what we set a precedent for doing before, and I was very concerned, are we following some of the good work Representative Pawlowski did? I think we are, but to Representative Hansen's point, it seems like this is happening more and more. It doesn't only seem like it really is. We anticipate that may continue, which I would assume it's going to, and so I think it would be prudent to be proactive next year and have further discussion. We're just about done here, but Representative Purcell, then Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just a couple comments. I you know, we're going to do what we need to do to take care of Minnesota, and that's good. And But I just want to comment. I thought I heard some reasonably good news from the fellow from Bowser talking about keeping perennial vegetation along some of these waterways, and we've been talking about that quite a bit in the last couple of months. And you know, we're going to get some practices out there that are going to help us, and we're learning. So I think we can do some good with some of this.
And to that point, Representative Purcell, Representative Torkelson is excused today as he's, I believe, over on Summit Avenue working on that issue. Let's see, I have a couple more questions. Representative Clark.
Just very briefly, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen's question reminds me that some of the discussion that we had back in that other earlier flood that you brought up was some issues of the difference in property values as well, some very high-cost homes, for example, versus some very low-cost homes in different parts of the state. And just that needs to be part of the discussion. I'm just bringing that up because I remember the resources that people had to repair, for example, their houses, whether or not they had the kind of insurance in a high-value home was quite different than people who were, you know, poverty level or very low working class income. So I just want to add that to the discussion. I know we'll have to bring that up when it comes up.
Good point. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to also follow up on Representative Hansen's comment, because actually the tornadoes began on May 5th, 1965, and hit our farm. And I happened to live on a turkey farm. My parents raised turkeys, and so I'm well aware of the devastation that a tornado can level across the landscape, and I also have been involved in with Representative Pawlowski on the 12A, 12B issues, and certainly since Rushford's in my home area, I'm originally from Houston, but well aware of how floods, tornadoes, all of those kinds of things can impact a community. And you know, one of the comments made yesterday by Representative Bernardi was about the value of a community and how people come together. And I can just attest to the fact that I know 50 years ago that was indeed the case. Thank you.
Well, Representative Poppy, I'm impressed as an infant that you had that kind of memory. That's impressive. Members, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2275 be passed on to rules. Any further discussion? As amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The bill is moved on. Representative Albright, thank you. Members, I've got the minutes of April 15th. Representative Cornish, you want to move the minutes of April 15th?
I will move the minutes of April
15th. Discussion of the minutes of April 15th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Members, I have the minutes of April 16th. Representative Heinzman, you want to move the minutes of April 16th?
So moved.
Discussion of the minutes of April 16th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Any further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry. Is this a change? Is something wrong?
No, I just wasn't here. So I'm just wondering if there's a way to say not voting.
Oh, you were excused, Representative.
I feel like I was.
You were in committee. We'll amend those minutes. Members, and which day is this, Representative Poppy? Representative Heinzman amends his minutes to reflect Representative Poppy's point. All those in favor of the amended minutes say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are amended as Representative Heinzman proposes. Members, we're adjourned.